I'm joined in studio by Michael Sharp, and we're going to talk about the Howth Gun Running Centenary. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Pat.
Thanks very much for coming in today.
Not at all.
Okay, the Howth Gun Running Centenary commemorations are on this weekend. So tell us a little bit about the Asgard Gun Running. Consignment of guns were brought into Howth.
That's right, yeah. It was on the 26th of July 1914, which was a Sunday, it's Saturday this year. But the Irish Volunteers, which had been set up earlier that year, basically the background to it was that there had been moves in the British Parliament, or the British and Irish Parliament as it was then, because during the 19th century, following the Act of Union, there was no parliament in Ireland, but Ireland sent members of parliament to Britain. And over the course of the 19th century, people like initially Daniel O'Connell and then Parnell and latterly John Redmond, the Irish Party, as it became known in Britain, became effective in the British Parliament in Westminster. And in fact, Redmond, who was the leader at this time in the early years of the 20th century, he was an ardent home ruler, as it was called, advocating home rule or a parliament in Ireland and a level of independence. And they were in the fortunate position that they held the balance of power between the Liberals and the Conservatives. Neither the Liberals nor the Conservatives had a majority in the parliament. And the Irish Party supported the Liberals on the basis that the Liberal Prime Minister Asquith promised a Home Rule Bill. There had been a number of other attempts at a Home Rule Bills, but they'd failed for various reasons. So the result was that this Home Rule Bill actually began to take on a life. It looked like it was going to happen. And in 1912, a couple of years before, there was huge resistance in Ulster to this, whereas the majority of people in Ireland were broadly in favour of home rule, or appeared to be. There was huge resistance from the north, particularly the northeast around Antrim and Down, where you had a Protestant majority, and basically they adopted the slogan "Home rule is Rome rule" and objected to it. So in 1912, you had there was a thing called the Ulster Covenant signed, where hundreds, thousands of Orange men and Presbyterians and Protestant supporters gathered near Belfast and signed a covenant saying that they would resist any attempt to set up a parliament in Ireland for home rule. And this led on then that in April 1914, the UVF, the Ulster Volunteer Force, which had been set up, brought arms into Northern Ireland, into Larne. So it looked like there could be a military confrontation. Mm-hmm. So the Irish Volunteers, which had organisation in based in the southern part of the country, which had been set up in response to this, decided they'd better have some arms as well. And a man called Erskine Childress, Robert Erskine Childress, who was the father of the man who subsequently became president and grandfather of the current MEP, Nessa Childress, mm-hmm. he and a journalist named Darrell Figgis went to Germany and negotiated with a German arms dealer and got some guns. Childress was born in England but had Irish connections through his mother, had spent part of his boyhood in Ireland with his mother's family because his mother and father had died young. He'd also studied in Trinity College and had a great affinity for Ireland. He was a leading member of the Liberal Party in Britain and was destined, it seemed, for a parliamentary seat. But he was very much a supporter of home rule for Ireland, and which eventually led to him splitting with the Liberals because he totally objected to them giving any reference to mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. Ulster Unionists. You know, he felt that home rule should go through. So he threw in his lot with the Irish Volunteers, effectively. He was a sailor, and he was also well known, or has been well known, because he wrote a famous book, a novel called The River of the Sands, mm-hmm. but that's another story. But he was a sailor, so he had a yacht called the Asgard, and on the 26th of Sunday, the 26th of July, 1914, they brought a shipment of guns and ammunition into Howth. The Irish volunteers gathered in Fairview Park, thinking that this was just an ordinary
drill or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But they were surprised to find that not only were the North City people there, but the South City people were there as well. And they proceeded to march out to Howth, where the guns were unloaded. Childers and his wife, Molly, who was very much of the nationalistic tendency, they helped unload the guns, as did a lot of the Fianna Éireann and the Irish Boy Scouts, mm-hmm. the Boy Scouts of the volunteers, who were a lot more organised, apparently, than the volunteers themselves. They unloaded the guns, and they proceeded then to march back into town with them. The police in Howth, seeing that they were, you know, there was only a small number of policemen in Howth, they saw they were outnumbered, so they decided they weren't going to interfere. The Coast Guard, Coast Guard made an effort to interfere, but they were sort of warned off. So they headed off back into town. There was a couple of attempts by the police to stop them on the way in, but they got past either by just they were coming back in the Howth Road and they diverted onto the Malahide Road and somewhere through the field. I mean, there was a lot fewer houses then, so they were able to go through the field. So eventually they reached Dublin City. And but by this stage, the army had been mobilised. There was a couple of regiments at the King's Border, and there was a confrontation which started, I think, in Sackville Street, but got really heavy when they turned into Bachelor's Walk and soldiers opened fire. And like a lot of other similar incidents since, it wasn't clear whether this was an order to fire or whether just a spontaneous action. But anyway, three people were killed. A woman who was obviously an innocent bystander, and a middle-aged man and a young messenger boy. Yeah. And
there were some wounded people as well.
There were a number of people wounded. So this was a major confrontation. And although the volunteers would, it was rather like 1916, which happened later, that although there wouldn't have been that much sympathy for the volunteers to begin with, when the people were killed and the funerals the following Wednesday attracted a huge amount of attention. The amount of guns brought in wasn't huge. I mean, that
I was just about to ask you that question, because it says from my PR sheet here, it says that they only had 900 Mauser rifles, and the Ulster Volunteer Force brought in 35,000 German, Italian and Austrian rifles. So would this be seen as more like a publicity stunt?
Yeah,
because it was disproportionate to the amount of guns that the Ulster people brought in.
They wouldn't have
stood a chance against that sort of arms.
No, I think certainly some historians would say this. Childers saw this just as a publicity, just as a show that they really didn't... it wasn't a realistic effort to arm them. Although there was another shipment. I mean, everybody talks about the Howth one. A few days later, another boat came in to Bray, or Kilcool rather, the south side, and the people marched through Bray with their weapons. Bray was a holiday town then as well, and the tourists saw them marching through the town with the weapons.
Yeah.
But some of the guns did end up, I think, being used in 1916, because of course, like everything else, that you had there were splits. The Irish Republican Brotherhood, who were the militaristic wing of things, who eventually set up the 1916 rebellion. There were some of those involved in the volunteers, and they.
Yeah.
And so some of the guns did end up being used.
Well, I'm just looking here, Michael, and Patrick Pearce admitted after the landing that the Mauser, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And he says, quoting, "It was of an antiquated pattern, without magazines, and was much inferior to the British service rifle." So, they were antiquated weapons. Do you know what I mean?
It wasn't really it wasn't realistic. I think as I say, Childers and Figgis, the journalist, went to Germany and negotiated this. How well versed they were in arms, or whether they knew what they were buying, and as I say, I think. It was seen that it was a publicity stunt. Although it did have an effect, and it probably had an effect beyond Ireland. I mean, some historians would argue that, given what was going on in Europe at the time, it had a significant effect, because at the end of June, Archduke Ferdinand of Austria-Hungary had been assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
So during the whole month of July, you had mobilisation of troops and threats of war and so on. which eventually led to the First World War, which broke out at the end of July as well, when Austria-Hungary declared war on Serbia. Mm-hmm. But a lot of historians would say that a lot of the calculations that were going on in Germany as to whether to enter the war or not were based on the fact that they thought England or Britain would not come into the war, because Britain would be tied up with what was going on in Ireland.
Yeah.
Because there had been a conference to try to sort out the Home Rule thing in Britain with the leaders, parliamentary leaders, the Asquith, the Prime Minister, Bonar Law, who was the Conservative Party leader, who was a staunch unionist, and the leaders from the North and the South, Redmond, and the leaders from the North, James Craig and so on. And there had been a conference to try to sort out some form of compromise earlier that year. And that had collapsed a few days before the whole gun running. So people from the continent looking on felt that there was a distinct danger of civil war in Ireland. Britain would be occupied that and wouldn't be able to enter a war, of course.
It was a miscalculation on behalf of the Germans, wasn't it? Really?
It was a miscalculation, and some historians I was reading there recently, Redmond made a speech over the August bank holiday, which was very significant, because he pledged Ireland to support the war, that if Britain went into the war, he pledged that Ireland would support it, irrespective of what they were, even though they were looking for home rule, they would still support Britain in the event of a war, which was apparently, some historians would say, was quite effective in letting the cabinet, the British cabinet at the time, say yes, we will have sufficient support to go to war. And of course, what happened then, of course, that the Home Rule Bill was put on the stocks until after the war, of course, it never came into force. By the end of the war, you had the election in 1918, which threw Redmond out, and Sinn Féin got elected. In the meantime, you'd had 1916, and eventually got the War of Independence, and independence by a totally different route.
Can we just backtrack a little bit and talk a little about Erskine Childers?
Yeah.
What happened to him? He joined the British Navy, I think, or the British Army.
Well, no, not really. He was born in Britain, in England. His parents died when he was young. His mother was had an Irish connection. His mother was a Barton from Wicklow, and her family, Robert Barton, who was a cousin of Childers, was in fact one of the signatories of the 1921 settlement. But so Childers spent time in Ireland as a boy, and he then, although he went to school in England, when he left school, he went to Trinity College. So he was very much a supporter of Home Rule. But he was also very well versed in the Liberal Party. He was also a sailor. He was a sportsman. He had ambitions to play rugby and so on. But he suffered a back injury when he was hill walking, and he had to take up less. Mm-hmm. That sort of finished it with field sports. He took up sailing, and he was a civil servant. He was employed in the House of Commons as a civil servant in the early part of the century. And he wrote a novel in 1903 called The Riddle of the Sands, which was seen as very significant. It was in the manner of sort of adventure stories, spy stories, that had been written in the late Victorian times.
And it was made into a film.
It was made into a film in 1979. And it was interesting, it was made into a television film in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
But The Riddle of the Sands, the main character, Carruthers, who apparently is sort of loosely, apparently based on Childers himself, goes off on a sailing holiday with a friend of his, Davies. He thinks that they're going off on a sort of well-crewed yacht and it'll be a bit of a cruise, but in fact it turns out they're in a small boat. They end up sailing around the Frisian Islands in northwest, just off Holland, Germany, and so on. And they come across the fact that a plot by Germans to build up a armada, basically, or a flotilla of ships, with the plan to invade England. And they foil this. But the book was quite influential, although it's a novel. It was quite influential in British policy because it brought to notice Britain's unpreparedness for war, and Winston Churchill, certainly, who was at that stage a Liberal politician, he subsequently joined the Tories, but he was in charge of the Navy, and he put a lot of effort then into preparing Britain for war, investing in ships and the Navy and so on. So Childers' book was seen as influential. Childers himself threw in his lot with the volunteers, as I said, over the plans to split Ireland and have... Mm. He had no time for that. Unfortunately, he was in the position that he wasn't entirely trusted by either side, because he was born in England and so on. The Irish didn't trust him, although De Valera, after his death, said he was made something like the sort of Caesar's being the noblest Roman of all. I can't remember the exact quote. But he certainly... Churchill certainly didn't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
He never achieved total authority within the Irish movement. Although he was secretary of the negotiation at the negotiations on the 1921 treaty. He was secretary to the group that went over, Collins and Barton and the others who went over and signed the treaty. He was secretary at that meeting. He came back. During the Civil War, he would have been identified on the anti-treaty side. The Emergency Powers Act came in. He was found in possession of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
A gun who apparently had been given to him by Michael Collins when they were friends at a later stage. And he was sentenced to death and was shot by firing squad. And apparently he was famous because he... went up and shook hands with each of the members of the firing squad,
mm-hmm.
and in fact his last words to them were, "Stand a bit closer, boys, it'll be easier." And
nerves are steel.
His son Erskine Jr., who of course subsequently became a Fianna Fáil politician and subsequently president of the country in the 1970s, he was a young boy at the time, and apparently his father told him to work tirelessly for bringing people together again, mm-hmm. and forgiving the enemies and so on. So that was allegedly Childers' driving force as a politician. And of course, there's a third generation now, and that Nessa Childers is a member of the European Parliament.
Well, then the somewhat Irish mistrust of him would have been forgiven in that respect.
Yes, as I said, De Valera was quite fulsome in his praise, mm-hmm. for him after his death. And he's generally regarded as a hero. And of course, Erskine Childers had a lot of respect during his own lifetime.
Yeah. Okay, Michael, I'm not going to keep you too long. I know that it's difficult to keep talking at length. But I'd just like to... You're probably aware of the exhibition of artefacts from the Arsgard gun running of 1914. It's taking place in the old courthouse, Harbour Road, Howth, on Saturday and Sunday this coming
weekend.
And it'll include artefacts from the Revolution of 1916 and the War of Independence in 1922. And there will be talks given daily by local historians and prominent speakers. And it's the old courthouse, Harbour Road, Howth. And there are contact numbers, Padraig Drummond on 085-835-3625. pdrummond@hotmail.com, irishvolunteers.org. And it's a non-party political event, and all are welcome.
Yeah, of course, the Asgard itself, the yacht itself, was refurbished and was used as a training vessel by the Irish Navy, and it's now in the National Museum, I think.
Yes. Was it that one, before I let you go, did that sink, or was it a replica of it sank?
I think it sank originally. I'm not entirely sure, but there's certainly, I think there's some version of it is brought up in the National Museum.
Okay, Michael, anyway, listen, thanks very much for that.
Not at all.